Charja Srila Prabhupada Ki Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Prem Sagaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityanand Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasari Gaur Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shyam Kunda Radha Kunda Yiri Govardhan Ki Sri Vrindavanam Ki Sri Madhupurnavadvipam Ki Ganga Mai Ki Jamuna Mai Ki Tulsi Devi Ki Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Samaveda Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. Gaur Premanandi Amaganathamananda Syoganandana Shakyachakshashunyadithamiratasmashvigurvenama. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Pitri Deva Manushyanam. Vedas Chakshus Tavishvara. Shreyastvanu Palabdevte. Sadhya sadhana yorapi. Pitri deva manushyana. Vedas chakshus tabeshvara. Shreyastvanu palabdhate. Sadhyasadhanayor api. Pitrideva manushyanam. Niraschakshustaveshvara. Shreyastranu palabdherte. Sadhyasadhanayorapi. Pitrideva manushyanam. Niraschakshustaveshvara. Shreyastranu palabdherte. Sadhyasadhanayorapi. Pitrideva manushyanam. Niraschakshu tameshva. Sadasaramayorapi. Pitrideva manushyanam. Niraschakshustaveshvara. Shreyastranam palabdherte. Sadhyasadhanayor api. Pitrideva manushyanam. Niraschakshustaveshvara. Pitre of the forefathers, Deva of the demigods, Manushyanam of the human beings, Vedha, the Vedic knowledge. Chakshu is the excuse me, is the eye. Tava emanating from you. Ishvara. O Supreme Lord. Shreya, superior to indeed. Anupalabde. In that which cannot be directly perceived. Arte, in the goals of life, such as sense gratification, liberation, and attainment of heaven. Sadhya sadhanayo. Both in the means and the end. Api, indeed. Translation and purport. My dear Lord, in order to understand those things beyond direct experience, such as spiritual liberation, or attainment of heaven and other material enjoyments beyond our present capacity, and in general to understand the means and end of all things, the forefathers, demigods, and human beings must consult the Vedic literature, which is your own laws, for these constitute the highest evidence and revelation. One might argue that while human beings are certainly prone to ignorance, the elevated forefathers and demigods are considered to be all-knowing within universal affairs. If such superior beings would communicate with the earth, then everyone could bypass Vedic knowledge in achieving his personal desire. This concept is denied here by the words Vedas Chakshu. Even the demigods and forefathers have at best an ambiguous conception of supreme liberation. And even in material affairs, they are subject to personal frustration. Although the demigods are all-powerful in awarding material benedictions to inferior species such as human beings, they are sometimes thwarted in their personal programs of sense gratification. A rich businessman, for example, may have no difficulty paying the insignificant salary of one of his innumerable workers, but the same wealthy man may be completely frustrated in his dealings with his own family and friends, and may also be defeated in his attempts to expand his fortune by further investments. Although a rich man appears to be all-powerful to his subordinate workers, he must personally struggle to fulfill his personal desires. Similarly, the demigods and forefathers encounter many difficulties in maintaining and expanding their celestial standard of living. They must therefore constantly take shelter of superior Vedic knowledge. Even in the administration of cosmic affairs, they strictly follow the guidelines of the Vedas, which are the laws of God. If such fabulous entities as demigods must take shelter of the Vedas, we can just imagine the position of human beings who are frustrated at virtually every step of their lives. Every human being should accept Vedic knowledge as the highest evidence in material and spiritual affairs. Uddhava points out to the Lord that if one accepts the authority of Vedic knowledge, it is seemingly impossible to reject the concept of material piety and sin. Thus, Uddhava persists in examining the Lord's controversial statement at the end of the last chapter. Om agyana timarandasya gyananjana shlakaya chakshusham mili tam jena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manodishtam shtapiditam jena putale swayam rupa kadamayam dadati swaha padantikam Mande aham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Parakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Scha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopi Shagopi Kakantaradhakantam Namastute Taptakanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavan Ishvari Vishvanu Suta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Manjakalpaturubhyascha Kripasindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namo Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasari Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare Pitri Devam Manushyanam Vedas Chak Shustavish parashreyastvanu palabderte sadhya sadhanayo api. So the main point is that to understand things that are beyond our direct experience, like the spiritual world, spiritual liberation, or even the attainment in this world of heaven and other material enjoyments, it's imperative it must be that the forefathers, demigods, and human beings consult the Vedic literatures. Yesterday, Tamaharp, you were preaching to about 50 children. I counted the number as about 50. And you were telling them about the basis of morality and ethics. And so you, of course, mentioned the Gita several times, how the Gita emphasizes something, but then emphasizes the topmost understanding, so the lower understandings are not counted as so important. You mentioned a book by a Christian and also the teachings of a philosopher and some traditional and modern views. And you didn't mention celibacy to the children. So I'd like to say a little bit about that, because young people, our teaching is that young people should not be attached to sex life. I found an example of Srila Prabhupada preaching to a community of devotees about this in New Vrindavan. He was speaking directly to the parents in New Vrindavan about educating the children according to the Vedic system, in which, first of all, one is trained not to be attached to sex life. That's called brahmacharya, of course. So he was speaking to his audience saying, I'll read a little bit. He was saying, these boys here, these children, can be trained. They're innocent. As you train them, they will learn. To train as brahmacharis is essential. The purpose is that they may not be attached to sex life. Why is that important? Because this material life is our bondage. We may be in gold, we may be in gold handcuffs, we may be in a prison where the bars are made of gold or the handcuffs are made of gold, or we may have iron handcuffs, iron bars, that doesn't matter. In this material world, we are handcuffed, imprisoned. And our aim of life is to get out of the prison. When Prahlad Maharaj was asked by his father, what's the best education he received from his teachers? He replied that family life is a dark well. And if a man has fallen into it, it is his sure death. Atmagatam. So the life of the soul meets with its end, sure death, in the dark well of family life. So unless we're very cautious, family life is very dangerous for spiritual advancement. And then Prabhupada told the Grihasthas and others in New Vrindavan, sex life is allowed only to beget children. We of course know that. Sex life is practically denied. So it's very difficult to completely deny sex life, therefore it's regulated. And first of all, the training for the children is no sex life. If a young man can remain without sex life, that is very good. And if he cannot, he can get married and live with a wife. And if a man sticks with just one wife, that's real married life. And he's called a brahmachari, even though he's a grihastha. And the wife is called chaste. Then Prabhupada gave an example of how you benefit by this required practice. He said it requires practice to be celibate. But it's not difficult, it just requires practice. He said, for example, you can practice lifting You can practice lifting something by taking a calf on your back. So this was at New Vrindavan. So maybe, you know, there were calves around. He said, what do you think? So you can lift a calf as it grows. Every day, if you lift the calf as it grows, you'll become able to lift the calf, which acquires more and more weight. The calf increases its weight. And then perhaps even when it becomes a big cow or bull, you can still lift it on your shoulder. But if all of a sudden you try to put a big cow on your shoulder, that won't work. But if you practice to take the little calf from the beginning, it grows and your strength grows. It's a gradual process. So that's the idea of teaching the children, with the aim not to take birth again in the material world, to satisfy mundane desires. And then Prabhupada sympathizes with the men and the women in the community, and he says, today the father and mother do not know the aim of life, nor are they trained in how to train their children. But in this age, although it's very difficult to train children, at least we can teach our children to chant the Hare Krishna mantra. Then everything is possible. That's the facility of this age. So I was thinking this morning about some of the young people that I've interacted a lot with at Bhaktivedanta Manor. There's a large Gujarati community, and many of the congregation and initiated devotees are from the Gujarati community. They're a little bit reserved, you know, they're Indian families. They're a little bit reserved in matters of sex life. So they kind of observe, they're trained to observe abstinence from sex until they're married. And I was recalling what it was like for me growing up in America. Sex education was not very well presented in my experience, either from the family, from the school teachers, and from the religious teachers. It just was really thin. Couldn't learn much about it. But there's so much to learn. It's such an important function in life. There really should be a lot of training in sex education. And very frankly explained to children so that they understand its importance and really help them, you know. But the Western idea is, well, you know, the children, when they reach puberty, they'll go here and there looking for boys and girls. Luckily, some of my friends here, and also some friends I've met in Europe, they meet a girl, they meet a boy, right off the bat. The first girl or boy that they like, they just stick with, and they get married. And they never had any other interest in any other boy and girl. So that's something like the Vedic ideal, where the parents help the children choose a suitable matching boy or girl, with the hope that, you know, that will really stick. They'll stick together. When we heard yesterday, when the Yamadutas and Yamaraj were discussing the situation about Ajamil at the time of his death, they were talking about what's the suitable ethics here. You know, he's supposed to be punished, he was sinful, and Yamaraj settles the discussion by saying, Dharman tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam, that religious principles are directly enacted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he told his messengers something that's stated in today's verse also. He said, although fully situated in the mode of goodness, even the sages who occupy the top planets cannot ascertain the real religious principles. Nor can the demigods. So to say nothing of the demons and ordinary human beings. That's the main point of today's verse, that it's imperative that the forefathers, the demigods, and the human beings consult the Vedic literatures, for these literatures are Krishna's own laws, they emanate from him, and they constitute the highest evidence and revelation regarding ethics and morals. Therefore, if we follow Dharma, because it comes from Krishna, when we follow it, he's pleased. The primary example of that, of course, is Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. At first, he hesitated to fight. Normally, a kshatriya has no hesitation to fight for the country. But Arjuna's country was involved in a family dispute. The leaders were the cousins of Arjuna. They were not the best leaders. The Pandavas were entitled to the throne. And to win the throne, they would have to kill, Arjuna would have to kill, Pandavas would have to kill their kinsmen. But normally that kind of fighting for the country brings out the idealism of young men and women. Young men are willing to sacrifice their lives for the country. The young women are willing to let their spouses or their boyfriends go to war. The mothers are willing to let the sons go to war. It's considered a high cause, a justifiable fight. And of course, the same man, Prabhupada says, when he's not fighting for the country or the government, if he kills another man, then he's hanged. If he's fighting for the government, then the government is responsible for those killings. And he's recognized, he's given a medal. Oh, you killed so many enemies, you saved so many of your fellow soldiers, very, very good. But if he kills outside the war field, then even he'll be taken to court and maybe hanged, and he can't get out of it. So Arjuna, in the beginning, he wasn't willing to fight, although the Dharma, Kshatriya Dharma, was supposed to guide him. But he was thinking in terms of his personal satisfaction. How will I be satisfied if I kill my kinsmen? Families will be disrupted. So many problems will arise. But later, when Arjuna wanted to satisfy Krishna and fight for that reason, he became the great devotee, greatest devotee. So that's the big secret of all of our activities. We're part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, our business is acting in such a way that he'll be satisfied. That's the statement of the Bhagavatam in the first canto, second chapter, 13th verse. Atapumbir dvija sristad banashrama vibhagasha svanusti tasya dharmasya sansidhir hari toshanam. It's concluded that the highest perfection one can achieve by discharging the duties prescribed for one's own occupation is to please the personality of Godhead. So, it is possible to get a clear idea of how to act to please Krishna from the Vedas, and that's the topmost teaching. But there are also, of course, many other teachings or considerations sometimes put forward on a lower level. And sometimes the lower positions are even adopted, and sometimes they're preached even our ISKCON communications office sometimes preaches lower positions and reduces the ethical and moral positions of ISKCON to something kind of silly or inane. For example, last Saturday, ISKCON News reported, ISKCON representatives promote religious freedom and dialogue in South Asia. This was a story about how recently ISKCON representatives attended a meeting in Sri Lanka organized by the Religious Freedom Initiative. Religious Freedom Initiative is a group in Washington, D.C. Anutama, the director of ISKCON Communications, is on the board of Religious Freedom Institute. And the meeting was about how to protect and promote religious freedom as a fundamental human right. Every human being has a right to religious freedom. That was the idea. So one of ISKCON's communication directors in India, Yudhisthira Govinda, he's a gentleman that I know, he's a young Indian, second generation devotee. In his speech, he said, life in any form is sacred, regardless of race and gender, nationality and religion. Therefore, true leadership encourages and inspires its followers to see the divinity in all and respect the divinity in all. That's quite like the Hindu pranams, this joining of the palms at the heart and saying namaste to someone. That means I recognize the divine in you. So, okay, that's kind of as far as it goes with Yudhisthira Govinda's idea that we should see the divinity in all human beings. But we actually say a lot more about divinity, and we say that everything belongs to God, that God's in everyone's heart. And not only human beings, in every living entity's heart, and therefore a human being who sees the divine will not slaughter the cow or other creatures of God. But at this meeting, the ISKCON representative didn't mention this, something practical that maybe you can apply in your life. Don't eat meat, fish, or eggs. That's our principle. That's what we teach. But he told the group, the members of ISKCON are taught to be respectful to people of faith and see the need for people of different religions to work together for the benefit of society. I encourage faith leaders to work together on environmental preservation, substance abuse, poverty and hunger. So let's look at those. Environmental protection. Who does the environment belong to? The Ishopanishad said it belongs to God. But he didn't mention that. What about substance abuse? We're against all kinds of intoxication, even coffee, tea, and cigarettes. But he didn't clearly say this to the people at the conference. He picked on the people who take heavy intoxicants, substance abuse, and said, you know, we should help those people. In other words, you know, feel morally superior to those who are abusing substances. But I won't tell you, I won't even mention that you're also abusing coffee, tea, and cigarettes, or alcohol and drugs, and you should stop it. What about poverty and hunger? We should work together again. ISKCON's work is not feeding the poor and eradicating hunger in the world, because there are laws of karma, and that means that some people will always be poor and hungry. Even Srila Prabhupada said that to a man who came to him in Bombay, I think, in India, and he said to Prabhupada, I saw poor people on the footpath, people who are begging on the footpath. What are you doing to help them? You know what Srila Prabhupada answered? I am not Bhagavan. That's Bhagavan's business. if there are some poor people and hungry people, because the laws of karma, the laws of Bhagavan, determine that some people will be distressed and unfortunate in that way. Okay, the conference was about the human right to freedom of religion. What about the human right to freedom from birth and death? That's our philosophy. Our ethics and our morals are to this end, to become free from birth and death. So I'm just pointing out that sometimes we miss the point when we're preaching. And that can be a waste of time because we're not addressing the problem of birth, disease, old age, and death. We address environmental preservation, substance abuse, poverty, hunger. And we say, those are the bad miseries. And the good miseries we can live with. We can live with some cigarettes, coffee, tea. We can live with, you know, like that, meat eating. It gets watered down a bit. So I'll stop here. Are there any questions?
Very good, Krishna. Thank you. Of course, your points are very well taken, that we don't espouse mundane causes without connection with Krishna, and that's much of what I was saying yesterday also. I think, though, sometimes we have to look at these things in a certain perspective, and why devotees may be preaching in a certain way under certain times and circumstances. I mean, I do know that some of the work the communications department has done as far as forming, working with some of these alliances with other groups, especially working with some of these other groups like the Alliance for Religious Freedom like that, they've also, on the other hand, mobilized those groups to help the devotees in places like Kazakhstan, where they're being persecuted, Siberia, Russia, mm-hmm. and other places. So sometimes there is a strategic purpose to have these alliances with other religious groups that can be called upon for great assistance to our cause.
Exactly.
So in that way, they're able to engage them in Krishna consciousness and help the spread of our movement. And I guess then I was also thinking of another perspective on feeding people is, of course, we do want to feed people prasadam, and that's for their spiritual benefit. I remember there was one story, it's pretty well known, that Srila Prabhupada was looking out upstairs in Mayapur, and there were children like fighting the dogs for scraps of garbage. And Prabhupada was so upset that he actually had tears in his eyes. And he said, nobody within so many 7 miles or something to Mayapur should
ten,
ever go...
10 miles.
10 miles should ever go hungry. So at that time, he didn't say, well, this is Bhagavan's will. He actually showed compassion for the suffering of living entities, and that how can we practically help them? And that's when he began the prasadam distribution program in Mayapur. It was begun. So, I mean, I just think we have to see a balance in these things too.
Thank you. That's very good. Yes, it is important to work with other groups. That was one of the purposes of this conference also. And we do help people by serving prasad. Another question here? Comment?
Along those same lines, I was thinking that even Prabhupada, when he came here, it's not like he laid down everything in the beginning. You know, he gave people a chance to become acclimated to the philosophy. He gave prasadam, but he didn't even say all the principles right away, you know. He encouraged people to take prasadam, to dance. So there's something you said, going in gently, you know, and then as time goes on, getting getting stronger. So I think that's the strategy.
Sorry, just repeat what you said, the very last thing you just said.
There's something to be said for going in gently, maybe not just giving the whole picture right away.
Gently.
And then as time goes on, revealing more about ourselves. So
yes.
I think that's a lot of the preaching efforts. The ultimate goal is to reveal everything. But if you come on too strong right away, just like Srila Prabhupada, if he would have done that right away, he may not have got such a following. So it was with intelligence, you know, the way that he preached.
Yes, that's called in like a needle.
Exactly.
And out like a plow. You go in gently and you can come out like a plow.
Hare Krishna. I do understand what you're saying, though. So I think I was talking to Pran Govinda about this. You know, we could maybe give a little more under certain circumstances, and we hold back, perhaps. Maybe a little more of our philosophy, or to help them stretch, or entice them, people, to take more of interest, not just go along with and try to be part of. But we have to know and be expert. And knowing that, you know, being sensitive to what people can hear and saying it in a way that's palatable, that they can accept. But I hear what you're saying. Well, why couldn't we give them a little more about who we really are and what we believe and what's really important about meat eating, perhaps, you know, like something that could really change their lives under certain circumstances, not just try to be part of. I get it. We want to be like, we need to be part of things. And yet maybe we could stretch them a little bit by giving a little bit more.
Uh-huh. Thank you. The idea of educating our children is an important... I was not a parent, but I don't have experience raising kids, but you do, many of you do, and we especially, as older people now, we have quite a big responsibility to educate a lot of young people, our children and in the community. So I encourage you to see how big of an opportunity this is to use the years in which the children are growing up and reaching puberty to really teach them all about the goals and the means of spiritual life. And that's a very big challenge. I've seen some successful outcomes. I have some friends whose children were homeschooled and went on to also be very successful in the best universities and get jobs as professors eventually and get married around the time they're 25 or 30. And I think they're celibate. They were celibate. It's a very big challenge as a parent. So maybe you can share with each other your experiences as parents. Maybe there could be some parents is to ghosty once in a while at a big community like this where you discuss how to teach celibacy to the younger generation. Yes, Prabhu.
I was noticing I did some work with children in the past at Gurukuls and things like that, that communication takes place when you have the proper respect. You know, otherwise there's fear-based and stuff, but when they... And that seems to coincide with Adoshrada Sadhusana. The first is that they have some respect or appreciation or faith in you. And then also, you know, Bhagavad Gita mentions that if the teacher can tell the student, if that relationship can say, something stronger, but a lot of times they just accept it as like almost friendly talk, you know, between, so that the position isn't established so much then. And I guess what the traditional wisdom is, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. So that the idea is, if you make the horse thirsty, he'll find the water on his own. Mm. You know, so the art of getting them to know the devotees, getting to respect the devotees as people, and becoming more able to hear. And Prabhupada, he automatically did that with his wonderful charm, and the people could feel his ever-well wishfulness.
Yes, Srila Prabhupada got everyone interested. And that's actually mentioned in the song that we sing at Guru Puja. The second line, we sing Sri Guru Charana Padma Kevala Bhakati. Bandho Mui Savadana Mate. Bandho Mui Savadana Mate means we feel very enlivened receiving the spiritual master's instructions. We're very willing to surrender to the spiritual master's instructions. You know, I was thinking about Vrindavan also in this connection. We have communities, and our communities should have a Vrindavan atmosphere. That means that we're celebrating the loving affairs of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna and the gopis. We have the real truth, the absolute truth about Adi Ras, the original loving rasa of the spiritual world, to offer to our children. So we've got such an advantage over other groups like Christians who want to teach abstinence, for example. We can teach children about the eternal spiritual loving affairs in spiritual bodies, embodied Satchidananda, the how do bodies that are made of Satchidananda engage in loving conjugal affairs. We can teach that. Something superior, higher taste. Any other comment?
Well, I was trying to think while you are speaking that what you said is very true. You have very nicely presented that we should follow, and the second generation everybody also should come to that point of getting trained about celibacy and everything. But I think from the leader side also, compassion can actually make it happen faster than just them to come up. I think compassion should be like more. Even from the beginning, I remember Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sutaku's time when he was giving a speech, and a very big famous dignitary came, Shamsundar Chakravarti. He was a minister. But he has a habit of smoking hookah every 10 minutes. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sutaku is speaking, and he goes off every 10 minutes to smoke. So next day, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur made an arrangement through a sannyasi. So Siddha Maharaj remembered that. To bring a hookah and the seat so he doesn't have to leave. Now, I'm not promoting or anything like that. I'm not saying that. But I'm thinking like Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur saw the power of bhakti. Harikatha is so powerful. But his compassion was making things actually happening, that Shamsundar Chakravarti, he was shocked that there is a hookah on his chair while he's listening Harikatha. And he thought, after a little while, he regretted. And he came and almost made his submission to the feet of Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur. Well, he didn't join immediately, but he gave up. He's a minister. So my point is that if the leaders are compassionate, like Prabhupada, I mean, even in Calcutta, Prabhupada was invited with Gargamuni and a whole bunch of devotees. Maybe you were there. And this in Bengali, some way far distance to Prabhupada's relation, that he cooked the prasadam with the onion, garlic. You were there? No? It's a famous story that Satadana Maharaj was there, and while they are eating, Gargamuni said, Prabhupada, this is not offerable. How can you? But Srila Prabhupada was honoring the prasadam. He said, just eat, it's all right. I know it's onion garlic means. But you don't know how hard struggle that man went through to feed us. I know his life. His intention to please us is more important.
Yeah, thank you. Those are good points. I also remember that Srila Prabhupada was willing to consider a smoking room for people who stayed at the Krishna Balaram guest house in Vrindavan. He was so liberal. He was thinking, well, we don't want to discourage people from coming, so we can have one room. But then he said no. He changed his mind. I mean, you can go outside to smoke, right? Also, you know, like in Vrindavan, you know, you would think, because it's Vrindavan, why would people smoke or take liquor in Vrindavan? But people do. They, and that's a pity. In a sense, it's a pity that, you know, the holy dhams, in the holy dhams, these things. And but yeah, it could be some holy dhams are better than others regarding that. They don't. There's no intoxication or meat eating. All right, we'll stop there. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. All glories to Sri Prabhupada.